Kansas City rap artist who goes by AY is out with the new album, and one of the songs tells a hard story.
I've got something I've been meaning to get off my chest about my last relationship.
He's telling the story of being abused in a romantic relationship.
Damn, your girl, this relationship is crazy. Why am I still calling you my baby? When I told you that was over the last time you tried to hit me.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're going to talk to A.Y. Young about this song and the mission he's on to bring the larger issue out into the open for the sake of other men who may be going through the same thing. A.Y., thanks so much for being here today.
Yo, what's up?
We all know, I think, that men can be victims of domestic abuse, but we are also so much more accustomed to hearing the story you tell in the song from a woman's point of view. Was that a difficult hump to get over in getting the courage to put this song out in the world?
Yeah. Like I said, I think, or like I was thinking earlier today, it was just more difficult trying to put something out that wouldn't offend anyone. Because, like, you can tell your story, but I didn't want to offend or alienate women. And I also wanted to empower women and also kind of inspire women and men to both collectively not only talk about this issue, like, hey, wow, men are abused, but also share their stories, you know, equally.
The song is called For You. Why is it called that?
Yeah, it's For You. I'm a man who... you know, I was in a 4-year relationship, and this is what I experienced, like literally being physically hit daily and mentally abused. So for me, I wanted to create an outlet for all men to connect to plug into, to not feel alone, you know, like I felt alone, and to not feel like less of a man or soft or, you know, or maybe even a liar, like when no one would believe me, or to be able to find or connect to resources. So I wanted this song for the people, for you, for anyone that went through anything remotely close to what I went through, to be able to have an outlet. Because I really didn't have or didn't feel like I had any resources or anybody that could listen or anyone I could talk to or just really anything. I just felt completely alone as a man going through this every day.
Without getting into a level of detail that's uncomfortable for you, when you say this relationship was abusive, what do you mean? And you've mentioned a little bit about this, but just the story of this relationship.
I mean, my personal story is very simple. Like the first 2 years of this 4-year relationship, they were a lot better than the last 2 years, but it was literally her, like my I'm not going to name her name. You know, throwing herself down flights of stairs, or me always helping her, saving her, or her punching herself. And then by year two, it switched to her inflicting all that on me. So by year two and year three or four, it was literally got to the point where it was like just every day this girl is like, you know, bloody nose. My parents are calling the police because I live next door to my parents. And I'm telling the police, don't worry, it's okay. And it just became almost like what sounds like Johnny Depp. It's funny, there's a celebrity going through this right now, Johnny Depp, exactly what he was going through, right?
Do you think that being a man created, because what you're describing in so many ways is a story that I've, a version of a story that I've heard women tell me. Do you think that being a man in this situation created a different set of challenges from what a woman might experience just based on stereotypes about who holds power in a situation like this or stereotypes about what it means to be manly?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that's one of the main reasons why men don't probably speak out about it. I mean, it's nuts. I have men and women, but men all around the country, all around the world, submitting their stories. Because with this For You, we kind of started a project of, hey, you know, I'm a man. I was abused by her. You know, tell us your story. You know, we're starting doing, you know, we're conducting interviews now and having men share what they've been through. But it's nuts because pretty much all the men that I'm talking to, yeah, they feel like, you know, it's like a stigma attached to it. It's like if you're a man, why don't you just leave her? You know, which is that's something that they tell women too. But it's interesting because it's like, well, you're a man, you're strong. You know, why are you going through this? Just leave her. Or, you know, there's got to be more to it. You've got to be punching her too, or knocking her out, or whatever. What are you doing to cause this? Did you cheat on her? Because there's like this almost stigma that men are just cheaters, when you can really just be a good man, and she could be dealing with personal issues, or not medicating, or, you know, bipolar, or whatever, right? It could be so many different things. Or she was dealing with abuse when she was a kid and didn't, you know, take care of those issues, right? Unresolved. It's always like an unresolved issue. But there's just so many stigmas attached to it. Like, you can't tell your boys because you don't want to seem a certain way. Like, it's just, you know, you start Googling stuff and there's really nothing out there. All you see is, if you're a woman and you're abused, leave him now, or like, call this number. Like, that's literally all I saw. Like, for years, I just saw resources for women. I never saw much for, like, hey, you're a man and you're going through this, and we're here for you.
Hang on with me for just a minute, A.Y. Young. I want to turn now to a national guest who has done some research on men as victims of abuse in relationships. Emily Douglas is a professor and head of the Social Science and Policy Studies Department at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
What do you hear in A.Y.'s story?
Well, first, A.Y., I really commend you for sharing your story and really having the courage to tell your story in such a public way. It's very commendable and brave of you. But what he is describing is what we have also heard from our research, is that the struggles that men have when they are experiencing partner violence, and when they are the targets of partner violence, the sort of internal barriers that they have to overcome because they haven't really thought about themselves as potential victims of physical abuse, especially. And then when they want help, they're not really sure where to get that help. And just the way he described, they look for information and they see agencies that are called things like, you know, Mary's Hope or, you know, Maria's House, and they're not really sure that those services are available for men as well.
I want to start with the first piece of what you just described, that men often haven't imagined themselves as potential victims of abuse. And when you said that, that really made me think about the fact that when you're growing up as a girl and as a young woman, people teach you about warning signs. There is a lot of cautionary tale delivery for women, for young women out there. And yeah, it had never occurred to me that that isn't something that we say to boys and teenagers. And
yeah, absolutely. I would say that the men who we speak to really talk about overcoming both internal and external barriers to help seeking. That in general, men are less inclined to seek help in general for anything. You know, it's even just going to the doctor for regular doctor's appointments and so forth. But then also, if they have to seek help for something that is considered to be not normative or not quote unquote normal for people like them, that's especially really hard. You know, I think that I remember we interviewed a man and he said he was looking at a pamphlet sitting in a waiting room somewhere and read things that said, like, are you afraid to go home at the end of the day? Do you feel like you're walking on eggshells at home? And sort of this list of behaviors. And he thought, oh, yeah, that's kind of like my experience. And he opened it up and it said, you might be a victim of domestic abuse. And he said, oh, no, that's impossible. And then he realized, oh, no, this is possible. This is me. But it was really outside his frame of reference. So I often hear men talk about this sort of moment of reckoning or this awakening of realizing that they're having an experience that they didn't think was possible to have.
You've studied, the way that you phrase it is, men who experience female-to-male partner violence and seek help. What inspired you to look into that? That's a very specific description.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really what we're interested in studying, and I do all of this, I've been doing this work, especially with my colleague Denise Hines at George Mason University. And what we're really interested in is the experiences men have when they are the targets or victims of partner violence. And the reason why we look into men who seek help is we're not really sure how we would find find these individuals otherwise. So, I mean, we're especially interested in their help-seeking experiences and that the barriers that they have to getting help, to either improving the relationship or moving out of the relationship, essentially improving things so that they are living in a more healthy place and also that their children are as well.
You've been one of the go-to people for this discussion nationwide, and I'm curious, how has the conversation about men as victims of abuse changed in the last few years?
It's fascinating, actually. Even 10 years ago, the conversation was really about, is it even possible that men can be victims? And today, the conversation seems to be switching to, how do we best serve men who are victims of partner violence? So, you know, really all over the country, domestic violence agencies and shelters are opening their doors, largely because men are coming forward at increasing numbers. And these are men who are straight, who are trans men, who are gay men. And they're realizing just what a diverse array of people who are seeking victim services. And so this is happening everything from a local shelter will get calls from to the Department of Health and Human Services at the federal level, figuring out ways to better serve this population.
One of the issues you've been talking about, which you've already referred to, is the need for more resources for victims who are men, because so many shelters and places like that are very specifically for women. What's going on with that on the national level?
Right. So, I mean, one of the things sort of at the highest national level is we think about our Violence Against Women Act, which was at the federal level, but that is really for any type of victim. It's not just for women, even though the act is called that. But in addition to that, the Department of Health and Human Services, the division which is really about providing prevention services for family violence, they've even been bringing together domestic violence agency providers and talking about how do we best serve these men, and do they need service? Do we have gender inclusive services or gender specific services? And those are really the conversations that are going on.
Could I cut in?
Yes, please.
Something? I would just
please
say,
do.
Like, one thing is, like, you know, I would say after speaking to literally close to 100 men in the last 2 weeks around the country, kind of tax bracket you can imagine, from celebrity status to national touring artists to urban 65-year-old man to white, you know, white male who's lived in a wealthy family who struggled in his first marriage with abuse because he was abused by his wife or whatever. I would say, like, men overall probably just feel a little alienated in this issue, because even you said something about an act and it has women at the end of it. It's like when we're Googling this stuff, when we're looking, you're saying, you know, people are saying that, well, the resources are here too for men, but we're not in the equation. And then I do believe in it being some of a social issue, some of the sense of raising awareness and being able to educate people on this. I cannot tell you how many hundreds of people on the music video that I released have said and commented saying things like, I didn't know men could be abused. The only two people I know that have ever been abused are you and Johnny Depp. I'm like, what?
You know, Emily, jump in here. Respond to some of this, please.
No, I hear you. I'm not certainly saying that we've created a perfect world to be able to provide services for men. It's rather that I feel like the needle has moved and it's moving in the right direction. There's still a long way to go. You're right. Things like federal legislation that talks about partner violence, but it's only really talking about violence against women, is still a problem. Or agencies that have women's names in them. But for example, when I get a phone call from somebody in Nebraska who's just been hired at a women's center because they've received so many phone calls from men who want victim services that they went out and hired somebody to now provide services in an area that they never have before. To me, I see this as tremendous movement in the right direction.
Yeah, that's huge.
We definitely still have a long way to go. And it's only by people who are really brave enough to come forward and to share their stories and to really hang with these tough discussions that we're able to continue this and to move forward.
Emily Douglas, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for covering this issue, and thank you so much for coming forward and sharing your story.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Emily is a researcher who joined us from the Social Science and Policy Studies Department at Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Massachusetts. AY, you've talked a little bit about what's been happening with your song and your video since you released them, but share a little bit more about that with us now.
Yeah, it's been nuts. I mean, I have two different videos out of the same song just to appeal to different audiences. One of them has almost 90,000 views in like a week and a half.
We're also getting calls from men who are just calling in to let us know that this is resonating, which is similar to what you've described.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have literally men from all around the country. We're actually starting a round of interviews interviewing these men to share their story. I started sharing with mine, and now we're getting men to share their story, and it is every spectrum.
We will get back to this conversation. I'm Gina Kaufman, and in just a minute, we will bring in someone who works on the issue locally, because helping men find resources when they're in danger from abusive relationships, that's something people are working on throughout our metro. We'll find out more in just a minute on KCUR's Central Standard. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in the studio with A.Y. Young, a musician who's out with a new song about a relationship he was in, and a relationship he now calls abusive. He's trying to help other men who are experiencing abuse in relationships find tools to talk about it and get help. Hi again, A.Y.
Hey, what's up?
Happy. Let's bring someone into this conversation who is with a local organization trying to reach men experiencing abuse in a landscape that typically emphasizes resources for women who are in danger. Carlin Davis is the community outreach educator at Friends of Yates in KCK. She's done presentations in schools, hospitals, other settings all over town. And Carlin, your message, if I understand it, is that abuse can happen to anyone.
Absolutely. Just like A.Y. said, it could happen to anybody, nobody. It doesn't discriminate against any demographic of people, age, gender, race, domestic violence, and intimate partner violence exists for all.
Yeah, you call it intimate partner violence. Can you talk to me a little bit about that language?
Okay, intimate partner violence is kind of reformed domestic violence. So we want to make sure that everyone knows that it could happen to them. Because most people think when you say domestic violence or I'm a victim of a domestic violence, it's a woman. If you say domestic violence victim, most people would probably envision a woman.
Yeah.
Because historically, that's what we focused on. So we want to make sure that we do include everyone, including men or people who identify as men, because those services that we provide are available to all. So intimate partner, that could be anyone. Everybody has a partner that they're intimate with. So if you are on the receiving end of verbal abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, you are a victim and you are experiencing behavior from someone that is not normal and isn't healthy. So that's why we want to put that identifier out there.
Is it your sense that male intimate partner violence goes underreported in Kansas City?
Yes, it does. I think there's a stigma in our society as a whole. We teach our young males to man up, you know, and like you said earlier, some men don't know how to identify or don't even identify themselves as a victim. So, and then there's no outlet. Once you identify that you're receiving this behavior, how do you respond to it? We always teach our boys to, you know, deal with it, man up. There's no recourse or there's nothing for them to do other than just deal with it. That's what our society has.
Yeah, and there really is no outlet. She said outlet. How many times have I said outlet?
Yeah.
Plugging in, which is all part of actually my movement of battery tour. But
exactly.
That's
so
if there's no outlet.
Historically, that's what it's been. But I believe it was Emily that mentioned the VAWA Act. Even though it is Violence Against Women's Act, we don't change acts, the names of them. We just restructure them and we add to them. So that is something, even though it is identified as violence against women, it is all inclusive.
It has protections for men.
Yes, protections for everyone. It doesn't discriminate. And by law, it is our obligation to service all. And so that's what I do. That's what I try to do is go out and educate people that it could be you if you are. You are available and we are here, or we are available to you no matter who you are, if you're male, female, or whatever race.
You know, you are part of a regional network that's been working on trying to fill gaps in resources and education. Can you talk to me about this larger effort that you're a part of?
Sure. So as you mentioned, a part of my job is to educate. So what I do is I just try to help young people, like if I'm working with students in middle school or high school, I go beyond dating, because violence, you know, between a friend, you know, you still should be able to have that safe space within your relationships. And so you don't want people to overstep their boundaries. So I do address that with the youth. These are the red flags if your relationships are unhealthy, whether it be a friend. Some identify it as bullying. But at the same time, I just try to make sure I cover everything. So if it's a crush, you know, somebody you like, most people want to be liked and loved. So, but what I want to let everyone know is, even though you want to be liked and loved, there are boundaries, and it's your responsibility, and you are entitled to a safe space and a safe relationship.
You know, I wonder if you see measurable change happening on this front in our area, more attention to the issue of men as victims of abuse, even.
I think so. Like I said, I just think that, like AY said, you know, the transformation of the relationship, you know, it started out in a certain way. Maybe she was doing self-infliction, you know, harm to herself, and then it eventually transitioned to him. And I think it's happening at a younger age. Again, I think it's society, it's acceptable. And we focus on the victim. Why didn't you leave? Why did you let it happen? So what we also want to do is transition to changing the behavior of the abuser. Let's focus instead of on the victim, and let's focus on them. Why are you doing this? This isn't right. So that's something that
sort of
we
intervention
need to,
when you say at an earlier age, intervention at an earlier age.
Yes, intervention and prevention at an earlier, and just awareness at an earlier age, because you'll go through life not knowing that you're being a victim. But we want to make sure that we bring.
Yeah,
awareness.
I mean, I straight up had no idea a man could be abused. Like it honestly took like probably pretty much like toward the end of the relationship of 1,000 different people saying, like, this is what's happening before. Because it's almost like when you're, like, a kid and you're a girl and you play with dolls, right? It's like that's just what girls do. They play mm-hmm. with dolls. And so, like, with domestic violence, it's like all you ever see is just a woman being hit or beat on, or, oh, girl, mm-hmm. leave him, or blah, 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 get strong, mm-hmm. you blah, blah, blah. That's all you ever. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like, not to minimize that.
Yeah, like, literally.
And we tell young boys that if you say she hit me, oh, she must like
you.
Hey,
just be a man. Oh, yeah, that too, when you're young.
You,
yeah, so that too, for
that's
sure.
That's something we, you know, they don't know how to express themselves. Instead of addressing the person, you know, victimizing you or
I know for a fact there are so many men listening. If you're a man, you're listening, you feel super alone. And I'm telling you right now, there is an outlet for you being created with this For You movement, and you can plug in, and we're finding resources. I'm glad you're here, because,
yes,
yo,
and everything is confidential. Everything is confidential. So, and you don't have to take part in all of the services that we provide. We are survivor-centered. We don't refer to anybody as victims. We refer to everyone as survivors, because that's what you are. You're making change, or you're taking the step to make the change in your situation.
You know, I am curious, because we've been hearing from AY his sort of misconceptions that he had going back to before he was even in this relationship, ever thought this might apply to him. What are the misconceptions you hear most when you're out and about regarding intimate partner abuse in general, or men as victims in specific? And go ahead and set the record straight as you share those.
With my experience, I think it's the same thing that AY said. They don't identify themselves as victims, or they feel like they may be looked down upon or seen as weak or
soft
if they don't speak up about it. You know, I guess people feel like they have to either accept what they're dealing with or walk away quietly and not share, or just try to put it to pass without even addressing it. So I think that we just want to make sure that everybody knows that they can come forward. And we want to reshape everybody's perspective on this, because it's not cool to be to victimize anyone.
And so, you should come forward. And also, yes. What I want to implore challenge men is that it's actually okay to just be emotional in the sense of talking about what you feel. Because mm-hmm. I think just overall, men, we're battling this thing of let's be, we're all cool and strong, right, strong in the club,
stoic.
And we or whatever, right?
Yeah, man up.
It's like,
yeah.
Yo, it's actually mm-hmm. I used to be joked about as gay because I was emotional, essentially, like as if gay was a bad thing, which is also not, you know, in my personal
right.
opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, oh man, you know, you can't be emotionally
there. You can't
there.
Express and your emotions.
I think relationships would benefit a lot. Just in general, a lot of women complain about men not being emotional, not sharing what they think and feel.
Exactly.
That's because we're dealing with that blockage. And I think that we need to see strong men that do great things be able to be vulnerable and open and
to
emotional.
To articulate
and that's
express
a good
and
thing.
Share.
And
yes.
Bro, you'll get more girls, by the way, men, if you are like that.
Yes, it is important to share and talk about it because, like you said, you get this overwhelming response.
Exactly.
What about just misconceptions about intimate partner abuse more broadly? How it works, like what the warning signs are, just bigger misconceptions in general.
Well, there seems to be a thought that it's normal or it's okay. Women, we're emotional, so we may hit, you know, our partner or yell and scream or name call. So that's the misconception, I believe, that whether it's the female, I can get away with this behavior because I'm an emotional creature and I'm, whatever it is. So, and then the male partner may feel the same way, that, well, she's a woman. She doesn't know how to control her emotions or control herself. So
stereotypes just all around are causing huge problems.
I believe that has a lot to do with it. It's how we perceive things and how we perceive relationships should be. As a society, what do we accept? And how do we respond to it? You know, do we look away or we just think it's okay? So a lot of times I think we have to, instead of thinking, okay, what did he do? He must have done something, like you said, maybe
that's
cheated.
So normal.
It's always.
It's like, well, what did you do?
Yeah.
It's like, what did you do, you know?
Yeah.
And even if you didn't do anything or they know you didn't do anything, it's like, well, why didn't you just leave? So, again, it's your fault. Like, you have to just roll.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's actually possible for men to develop. I think it's called Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes.
Right? It's
mm-hmm.
also possible for you to, like, love somebody and not want to leave them and love them, but also not want to be hit or attacked or mentally destroyed. You know, because a woman can also, like, dismantle you mentally. And that's what I struggled with, too, because after the physical's happening, then they'll dismantle you mentally. Well, don't walk away, right? You start getting cornered. You start getting alienated. You know, like, if you really care about this, you're going to work on it. But mm-hmm. you don't want to get hit. I keep talking about Johnny Depp because his fan base is supporting me so well right now. Because Johnny Depp's going through this, and if you review some of his tapes, you know, the girl is basically saying, well, you know, well, I love and care about this relationship so much that I'm willing to work through it.
Yes.
But he's like, well, I don't want to get hit, and I didn't want to show up and get punched and knocked in the face, and
mm-hmm.
and you start getting beat mentally.
Mm-hmm. Carlin, talk about this a little bit, just in the sense of the resources. We started kind of with resources, and I
mm-hmm.
want to come back to that because
okay.
the resources issue is a really tangible thing. And I wonder what you think as someone who has worked in this field for a while. You're new in your position, but you volunteered
mm-hmm.
for the organization you're with for 10 years. Do you think that there is some justification for keeping resources separate on some level, especially for people who are feeling unsafe? Or no, that just doesn't make sense.
I don't think it's so much that the resources are kept separate. I think it's more of a safety and confidentiality issue. We want to, some with women, their abuser may be a male.
And may not
male
be.
Or may not be. And for the men, it may be a female or may not be. But we keep... What we want to make sure is that everybody know that the resources are available to them all. We cannot discriminate against anyone. And But we may run into a problem, not with our facility, but there may be other organizations that may or may not have the ability to provide certain services to everyone. But we cannot discriminate against male or female. So all services are available, and we want to make sure that everyone knows that they're out there.
See, this is available, but again, I'm going to stress the fact that, first of all, this is a national issue, and I hope that this 4U project can continue to have platforms to plug in more and speak to a wider audience. Secondly, at the end of the day, if you Google this, if you YouTube like men being abused or what to do if you're abused or how to, you know, heal your relationship with your family because it's broken because of it, you can't really find much stuff, period. Just try it right now. Literally, I can type men too. One of the reasons why my song's blowing up is if you type like men are abused or whatever, my stuff's popping up on the Google search. That's ridiculous.
Because there isn't a lot.
Are you kidding me? Like, I literally can type woman hit and like it's a million options.
And that
a million
to,
stories.
That speaks to men coming forward and men.
And you're right, not enough men are coming forward, and that needs to happen now in 2020.
If you don't come forward, we won't know, we won't be able to show, we won't be able to reach anyone. So that's the thing. We can work to put it out there to let them know, hey, we're here for you. You please step forward. We can help you. There's so many resources.
But men but have you to come have forward. To come so men, forward. You have to come forward and share your story, forward. And there are safe places.
I'm going to jump in, AY, to ask you, is there anything you want to say to the guy, like the younger you, maybe, or a guy who could be listening who's in a relationship like the one you were in. But really, I'm thinking about if you could speak to the you who didn't know what to do, who didn't know what was going on, what would you say?
I mean, it'd be as simple as, hey, man, there's an outlet for you to plug into. And there's an outlet for you to plug into. And there are other people like you that you can talk to and like work through this, period.
Is there anything you want to say to people who might be on the other side of that relationship? Because I know you've been very careful to not shut perpetrators out of the conversation, to be speaking to them as people with problems who need help.
I mean, I can't wait to start interviewing abusers so they can tell their story of why or what made them abuse. So, like, what I'm doing with this 4U project, if you're listening right now, if you're a man that's abused, reach out, connect to AY Music, connect to us, share the story. It's confidential, and we are arranging interviews or if you want to do a written thing. Secondly, you know, we're going to do roundtable discussions with men and women, with influencers, with athletes, celebrities, to talk about this on video on a podcast setting in 3. Yo, if you're an abuser, I would love to speak to you because we need to hear from you and your perspective to fix this issue.
AY Young, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Heck yeah.
AY's new album is Hello Again, and the song that inspired this conversation is For You. Carlin Davis, doing education and research for Friends of Yates and KCK, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gina Kaufman. KCUR's Central Standard continues in a minute with author William Least Heat Moon. That conversation is next. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and my next guest is a celebrated Missouri author, William Least Heat Moon. His first book, Blue Highways, was about a journey he took across America in a van in 1978. He set out to hear people's stories in well-known places as well as hidden corners of the country that hadn't been heard from as much. So when the book came out, it shot up to the top of the New York Times bestseller list and stayed there for 42 weeks. Maybe it is fitting that his new novel is also a journey across America looking for stories that didn't make it into what you might call the dominant narrative of this country's early history, only he isn't the one doing the traveling. He's left that to his fictional characters, an English physician and a runaway slave. The book is called Oh, America, and William Least Heat Moon is joining us now. Hi, William.
Good morning. Good morning.
Why don't you start by sharing just a little bit more about the two main characters and the journey they're on together?
The protagonist is a man like Alexander Hamilton from St. Kitts, so he's a colonial Brit, but he's educated in Cambridge, so he carries a great deal of the English points of view and comes to America to look into the American experiment in the year 1848. I chose that year because it was before the Civil War when things got changed so drastically, but the seeds that we see today coming into, I'm afraid to say, fruition were quite evident there. The book's very much about issues that we have to face today, like certainly race relations. His traveling partner, the doctor's traveling partner, is an escaped slave, and the physician is helping this slave escape and thereby violates the law and puts slave catchers on their trail. And they begin to move from Baltimore across the country. They want to get to the Buffalo Plains in Montana. They both want to see the bison, the great bison movement, and they want to meet real Indians. I should say, Gina, that the book begins on a ship moving from Plymouth, England, to Baltimore. And the first several chapters are about the immigrant experience of crossing the Atlantic Ocean and what the people went through. The point I wanted to make there is those immigrants are all white. They're English, they're Polish, and they're German. And we today think of immigration as people of color. But these are, I'm sure in this audience, your good audience here, that there are a number of people whose ancestors were in that immigrant category, as we all are, regardless. American Indians, Native Americans, don't like to hear it, but they too are immigrants. Saying that will get some arguments, but we know the anthropology. They came from the old side of the world.
This is in part your own background as well.
Yes, yeah. The book is called a novel, and it is, but I must say, and you introduced this nicely, that what I did in writing the book was to imagine myself traveling across America in 1848. I know the country. I've been in every county in America, so I know the country. I knew the territory pretty well.
The physical landscape.
The physical landscape, yes. And there's a great deal in the book about going up the Missouri River from the mouth to almost the headwaters. And in fact, there's a stop in there these two travelers make in 1848 of, I'll say Kansas City, but it was Westport Landing then. And they proceed from there, from boat on by horse and other means, moving west.
You know, I want to say, so I am thinking about the relationship between you and particularly the physician traveling across the country. You know, writing this book from the perspective of a person living in the United States in 2020, you continually refer to what's going on this continent in 1848 as the American experiment. And I wonder if you're asking the question the physician is asking, which is, can this experiment work?
Oh, indeed. Our second president, John Adams, said that all democracy sooner or later commits suicide. And I cite that in the book. Benjamin Franklin famously said, and it's been often quoted now, given the temper of our times, that after the Continental Convention, a woman approached him and said, "Dr. Franklin, what do we have now, a republic or a monarchy?" And he said, "You have a republic if you can keep it." And we see things going on in this country that we have not seen before in many ways. But it's that very aspect that led me to writing the book, and I began in 2016, because there was a phrase then. It began with the elections of 2015. It got more pronounced in 2016, and very much so since then. But people would see what's going on in this country, especially politically, but in other ways too. And they would use a phrase. I'm sure all of your good listeners have heard this. "This is not who we are." And I thought, this is who we are. We've been that way from the beginning. The first successful English colony, Jamestown, there were 19 slaves there. That often gets left out of the history. And other things that are going on now, the rise of corporate power, the rise of big pharmaceutical companies through advertising, women's rights, American Indian dispossession, and certainly race relations. They're all in the book because they were in America at that time. And what I wanted to do for people who are saying, this is not who we are, I thought, if I can tell a story that is interesting and will draw the reader along, maybe they will see some American history they had not seen before and realize this is who we are. We haven't corrected those problems. Some of them have gotten worse. So let's address them.
Because you typically write nonfiction, I have to assume you did tons and tons of research. Talk to me about your research.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier, and interrupted myself with another thought, which happens when one gets to be 80 years old. Writing the book was something like taking the Blue Highways trip again, but instead of stopping and talking with people I met along the road, I went into my library. I have a collection of books, more than 3,000 of them, that are about nothing else than traveling and exploring America. So I would pick books that dealt with the period around 1848, and I would use those authors as people to interview. So that to say that, oh, America is fiction, to some degree it is. I did invent the two characters, the doctor you mentioned, Dr. Trevelyan, and the slave is named Nicodemus. I invented those characters and put them in motion. But the things they encounter, and they encounter so many things on their 3,000-mile journey, those I took out of these books. I didn't make that up. So, for example, there's a scene in there where they come across two women who were out rowing on a lake and got caught in a thunderstorm. The boat gets hit by lightning. One woman loses her, she's 20. She loses any memory of what her life was like before that lightning strike. She doesn't lose her power to, well, she is. She's deafened and loses some of her power to speak. The other woman, her sister who was with her, was unharmed other than suffering some pain. I didn't make that up. I took that right out of an encounter written in about 1845 or so.
So this is a synthesis of 3,000 books.
Well, no, I didn't go to all 3,000. I picked them by period, and then I also tried to pick the ones that were the best written books where I could.
You know, one of the moments that really intrigued me was when the two characters stop in a German Mennonite community. Part of what the main characters explore there is a question of whether to remain separate as immigrants with a separate language and a separate culture, or to conform. That's a question for immigrants across time.
It is, and there's a phrase that the Mennonites have even to this day about something to the effect, I'm going to misquote it probably just a bit, but it means come ye out and be separate. Come away from the materialism of American commercial life and political life and private life. And they still, as people know who have been to see the Mennonites or the Amish, yes, that's the way they still live. There's a great deal, not a great deal, but there's much in the book about the American compulsion toward materialism at the loss of other values.
The Mennonites practice, in fact, in the physician's words, an orderly economy, I'm quoting now, an orderly economy driven by principles beyond greed. Here the continuing question is not how to gain more, but how to do with less. Are you seeing in this example something from the earliest days of America that we could consider a different model and a different inheritance that is part of American history? Because this line of thinking that you describe does sometimes even today get labeled as un-American, and you seem to be saying it's as American as anything else these guys encounter.
I do think we're seeing signs of that. There's a book that came out, I'm going to say, about 4 or 5 years ago. I can't name the author. She has a Japanese name. But the book is about, your readers or your listeners will recognize this, I think. But it's about getting rid of things, de-accessing, getting rid of clutter and stuff. That book has sold, the last time I heard anything, had sold 5 million copies in this country. I think that means that there are a lot of people out there who realize that we have taken commercialism, we have taken possessions far too far, and it's time to lighten the load and pay attention to other things that can happen in a human life.
This idea that what we consider to be the legacy of the founding of the country, that we kind of pick and choose what it is we talk about, is something that I've been thinking about a lot as I've been reading your book, because they do encounter so many. This is, you know, before people have all the same television networks to be telling them, here's who all of us are collectively. There were very separate communities that these characters encountered, and very separate ideas about how to live and how to be.
Yes, I I'm not sure how to respond to that. Was that a question? I'm
sorry. Well, just I am curious if that's part of the message, that we have multiple legacies when it comes to what is America.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's, and I think we all love that. We may have trouble at times respecting some of those differences. Certainly it's apparent today where we have political leaders using differences to separate us. But I think that most of us who paying any attention at all to what it's like to be human, realize how necessary it is to respect otherness. If there's one word that I would use to describe what my books are about, it would be, as best I can do it, it would be otherness. If we're respecting otherness in all ways, from things to people to happenings, it gets much easier to get along. And I've never forgotten when Rodney King, the black man who was beaten by the police in Los Angeles some years ago.
In the 1990s.
And his comment later was, "Why can't we get along?" Those simple words burned into my brain, and I'll never forget them. And it's so relevant now. Why can't we get along? Well, one thing we can do is to respect otherness. If one is practicing some respect, then that indicates a certain amount of honoring of somebody else, and that's very attractive to human beings, to feel that your differences are being not only respected but perhaps honored.
Did you ever consider when you wrote this book the idea that maybe the journey of William Least Heat Moon going through his books would be maybe as interesting of a journey as a physician, a colonial physician, British physician in America in 1848, going on a journey across land?
Well, no, not until about 15 or 16 did that approach. Since we're here in Kansas City, my hometown, as I live in Columbia now but grew up here, I've been thinking about that, and being back in the old neighborhood, I realize what a segregated city Kansas City was in the 1940s and before then and on into the 50s. I grew up at 74th and Flora, between Troost and Paseo, between a streetcar line, the Paseo line, wonderful streetcars, and a bus route on Troost. And if you went a little farther, you get over on Ward Parkway. Kansas City was a vertically laid out city, north to south. In fact, I was told as a boy that Troost Avenue was the longest, straightest street in America. I'm not sure that's true, but that's what I heard. My point here is that we were really stretched out. So living in the south part of the city, originally, my earliest years, just a block from the city limits, I wasn't exposed to all of the ethnic culture that was in Kansas City, but very tightly tucked into neighborhoods. And then I went off to the University of Missouri in 1957. Well, my high school, Southeast High School, completely white. Every group I was in, the Boy Scout troop, you name it, all white, went off to the University of Missouri. I went the same year that the first two African Americans went to the University of Missouri. And it was a white world, and I didn't realize how white it was and how distorted that was. And it didn't really dawn on me until 1978, when I took the Blue Highways trip. And any of your listeners who read Blue Highways will know that was an exploration into the country, talking random in the back roads and talking to people. And that's when I began sitting down and talking with Latin Americans, but people of Latin descent, Hispanics, with people of color of in the South. Sitting down and talking with them and listening, and that changed me. I moved from having voted for Barry Goldwater when I was quite young to moving farther left.
Just getting outside of your bubble.
Yes. These people that I don't want to say deprived of seeing, because that sort of makes me like a victim. It wasn't a victim, but it's what the world that I grew up in. And it was not the world I wanted to be in. And it was in that way, it was there was a certain cruelty to that. I mean, segregation is a cruel thing.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, and we'll leave a lot of surprises for our listeners who decide to pick up your new book, Oh America. William Leistheat Moon, author of a lot of books, including this one, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Gina, and thank you for your good preparation.
Oh, well, that's a wrap for today's show. On tomorrow's show, we will pay tribute to Katherine Johnson, the NASA mathematician who inspired the movie Hidden Figures. In her honor, we will revisit our Screen Time episode about that movie tomorrow at 10. You can listen to any of our past shows at kcur.org/centralstandard, and the one from today will be up there by the end of the day. We spoke earlier about men as victims of abuse, their experiences, and their struggles to find resources. We spoke now with William Leistheat Moon, author of Oh America. And you can talk to us on Twitter anytime. We are at KCURCST, and I'm at Gina KCUR. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, and Noah Taborda. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next, so stick around with that with Steve Kraske.